Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sound Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. QT and Sign Guy with you as normal. Really quickly before we jump into some interview here, some show notes. If you're looking for wrestling tonight, WCWO at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, ECW in Winter Haven, Florida, featuring Jesse Bell, The Amazing Maria, Thunder Rosa, and Camille from NWA. And also tonight, USA Championship Wrestling in Jackson, Tennessee, and EWI in Mandolin, North Dakota, featuring some of our very own Pacific Northwest stars, Bad Blood, Just Exciting, and Chris Brady. So make sure if you have some independent wrestling near you, go out and support it. Without further ado, though, I want to bring our guest on. He is out of the Midwest, one of the top performers out there. Dre Jacobs, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. And since today happens to be your first time with us, I'm going to give you our traditional first-timer question. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
How much time do we have? Well, I guess we should start back. Like, when I was a kid, I was probably maybe 5 or 6. My life took a turn kind of like for the worse. I was in a bad situation with my stepfather at the time, and just to put it bluntly, he's very abusive. And for the longest time, wrestling was my escape. And, you know, everybody needs that thing that they can, you know, pull themselves away from the reality and, you know, the dark times in life and things like that. And wrestling was that thing for me. Fast forward to when I was about 15, we ended up moving, and I left all my friends behind and everything like that. And I was very depressed. I was suicidal even, and I actually had written a suicide note the day I ended up going to meet my trainer. And I went to school with the suicide note in my pocket, and my friend at school was like, "Hey, man, I know you like wrestling. Why don't you check this place out?" And he gave me an address. And when I got home, I you know, took everything out of my pocket, and two pieces of paper came out, and one was the address to the school, and the other one was a suicide note. And I tore up the suicide note, man, and began my journey as a pro wrestler. You know, I had to, it was my second chance at life. And ever since then, I've been going strong.
I'm very glad that you are still with us and things worked out in that situation. Now, looking at your situation that you just told us about when you were starting, oftentimes professional wrestlers tend to forget that the fans look to them as role models, as inspirations, as larger-than-life people that they could aspire to be. Often we in the business don't fully appreciate or think about that aspect of things. For you yourself, do you find yourself being a little more aware of when younger fans sort of look up to you and they express an appreciation for what you're doing?
Oh, absolutely. It's honestly one of the reasons I decided to become a wrestler was because, you know, being that kid that had, you know, those dark times in his life and looking up to pro wrestlers, that's really all I had. So for me to be able to be on the other side of that, you know, for me to maybe give a kid that was like me some hope that things are going to be better, you know, or a role model that they can look up to, you know, that's one of the number one reasons I do this. You know, I have two kids of my own, and I'm a superhero to them because of all this, you know. So I try very hard to be that person that someone can look up to and think, you know, hey, if that guy can do it, I can do it. If that guy can push himself, I can push myself. And I love to be the motivational person in other people's lives and help them grow and become something, become what they want to be when they get older or realize their dreams or something, you know?
Now, in a lot of wrestlers' careers, they have traditionally put Japan as a career goal, just getting the opportunity to go to Japan to wrestle has long been a bucket list item. Pre-COVID shutdown, the last couple of years had been increasingly easier for independent wrestlers to make that a reality. Is wrestling in Japan something that has ever crossed your mind as far as having it as a goal?
Wrestling in Japan was my first goal, actually. It was the number one thing I wanted to do. Before WWE, I wanted to get into like Ring of Honor or Impact or anything like that, Japan was the number one goal for me at that time. I started off watching WWE, obviously. I think a lot of us did, either WWE or WCW. And once I got into wrestling, I did a little bit more digging and found the independent shows, and I found the Mexican shows and the luchador shows, the European shows, the Japanese shows, you know, and I felt like that Japanese strong style was the style that I wanted to emulate. It was the style that I brought to whatever company that I was being booked for. So Japan was like the number one goal for me to get into before anything else is. Like, before I go here, before I go there, I want to go to Japan, you know.
In the United States, a lot of wrestlers have the goal of competing in all 50 states. All 50 states, to my knowledge, currently, or at least previously to the shutdown, have some form of independent wrestling attached to them. One of the harder states to cross off the list has been Alaska. There's been steady independent wrestling in Alaska for about the last 8 years or so, but not a lot of people know of the wrestling scene in Alaska, and it is, of course, limited due to geography. Is wrestling in Alaska something that has ever popped into your head as a goal?
Honestly, no, because I never knew there was wrestling in Alaska. But, I mean, it is now. Now it's in there. You know, I'm up for going for anywhere, so.
There is a thriving scene in Alaska. You should do a little bit of research.
Yeah, I'm going to do some research on that. I'm going to do some homework tonight.
Now, in your career so far, you've been at this for several years now. Mm-hmm. And anyone that's been in for a while, of course, has that one match that seemed to go on forever, whether it was because it was just longer than they normally go or it felt longer because of injury or whatever circumstance. What, at this point, would you say has been your longest match?
Well, Actually, the longest match I've ever had was against Cody Hawk at XVW in like 2000 and I want to say 2009, 2010. And we went like 37 minutes, I believe. And he just he put me through the ringer, man. He's an amazing guy and brought a took a chance on a kid and let, you know, this kid take him to the limits for 37 minutes. The longest match I've ever felt like I've had, like it just felt like it went on forever. It was a match with myself, Malcolm Monroe III, and Chris Moore in a triple threat. And it wasn't that it was like a bad match or anything. It just felt like we did so much that it felt a lot longer than what it really was. So those will probably be my two on both. You know, on both hands, those will probably be my two longest matches I've ever had.
From what I've seen in matches I've watched of yours, it seems like, of course, you do a lot more of the power-based type of moves, a lot more of the brawling in your particular style of match. Do you have any particular favorite style of opponent, be it someone that's maybe more technical based or power based or submission based that you think better suits what you do in the ring?
I'm a pretty well rounded all arounder kind of guy. Like I like wrestling all different types of styles. I like wrestling guys and girls with all different types of styles, you know. One of my favorite styles that I like to work outside of, you know, the brawling and the power game is I love Lucha Libre. I love to work Lucha Libre, and very rarely do I get to be put with somebody that can run it. So when we do get to run it, it's like, oh, wow, you know, Dre Jacobs can work Lucha, or, you know, and it's the same thing with a lot of things. Like, I love the catch wrestling style. I love the European style of wrestling, and normally I get put with someone who doesn't do that or doesn't know I can do that. And, you know, so we automatically think, oh, well, let's just go to the brawling and, you know, and it's like, oh, there's a lot more to me than meets the eye. And, really one of my favorite opponents that really brings that out in me is, well, there's a couple of them. One, I got to give it to Alex Weir. Because he's a good kid. He brings a lot of that, you know, push and drive out of me anytime I work with him. Another person that is pretty well-rounded that makes me move would be Malcolm Monroe III.
One of the things that in this era of wrestling seems to be lacking is the traditional wrestling manager. The last probably 20 years or so on the national level, there's been very few true wrestling managers. We have more on the independent circuit, but it's still not as prominent as it was, say, 25 years ago or 30 years ago when you had so many good quality managers at any given wrestling show. What do you think of the state of wrestling manager in today's marketplace, and do you think that we're going to see any type of resurgence either on an independent level or even on a national level?
Personally, I would like to. For the last 4 years, I've had a really good manager in one Johnny Delicious. And I think a lot of people, promoters, bookers, they take him for granted. They're like, oh, he's a manager. He doesn't do any in-ring stuff. He can't bring something into the show. And it's like he's a heat magnet, you know. And for the longest time, I wasn't able to cut promos. I wasn't able to talk. I wasn't any good at it. And he was my voice for the longest time. And I feel like that's so underappreciated now. I don't really know if we'll ever see a resurgence of it again. I hope we do, because there's a lot of men and women out there that are really good at it and deserve to get a fair pay for what they do outside of the ring or next to the ring, you know, than just, you know, being the person that's out there with the wrestler. You know, there, you look at guys like Bobby the Brain Heenan, who got involved, and Jim Cornette, who would run around like a chicken with his head cut off whenever somebody was chasing him around. And it's, you're right, it's something that's missing, and it's something personally that I miss. You know, I try to do what I can to get my managers involved if there's anything for them or if there's something I can, you know, fit them in. But I'm not really sure about the resurgence. You know, like I said, I hope. That's all we can hope for, you know.
In my experiences in wrestling, one of the more interesting things I have seen as part of this business is a number of individuals will have very specific wrist tape rituals. I've seen people that won't go to the ring unless they have applied their wrist tape in a very specific way. I've seen guys go out with certain phrases or drawings on their wrist tape. I've seen people only use a specific type of tape. There's all types of rituals out there from various people. Do you yourself have any particular tape ritual?
No, not really. I usually don't wear wrist tape unless I need to. If I do, sometimes I'll write something on it. Sometimes I'll write like the initials of my grandmother who passed away, or fallen friends who have passed away that were in the business, you know. But other than that, I usually don't wear wrist tape. So
on shows you've been on, have you ever observed someone whose wrist tape ritual was particularly odd to you, or is that something you don't notice very often?
To be honest, I really don't notice it. I mean, those are like little things that people can look for now, but I've never really noticed it. A couple of guys who will put on wrist tape and they'll always like put something meaningful on it, but like I've never seen any like out there, you know, oh, I can't go out there until I have wrist tape on type things, you know what I mean?
I definitely understand that for sure. Next time you're on a show, take a scan around the locker room and see how detailed and how attention to minutia some of the people are with their wrist tape. It's kind of fascinating if you look for it.
Yeah. I've seen a couple of rituals outside of like the wrist tape. Like I knew this guy that, I don't think he wrestles anymore, but I knew this guy that he used to do like 100 squats and 100 push-ups before like he would go out there. Like if he had enough time before his match, he had to get in 100 squats or 100 push-ups. If he didn't, then he would ask to be like pushed back further in the card. Half the time it wouldn't happen, but he always had to get in like 100 squats or 100 push-ups before he went out there.
I've definitely seen rituals that involve things like that as well. Everybody is different. All the rituals are different, but it's kind of interesting to see it. One of the things that has popped up at an independent level in pro wrestling, and occasionally you will see someone that puts out pay-per-view or a bit of a bigger card attempt this, and that is live commentary. A lot of places will utilize a couple of guys, or sometimes more than that, doing commentary over the PA system as the matches are happening. Do you have any personal preference one way or the other as far as having live commentary on the shows?
Well, over the PA during the matches, I hate it. I think it takes away from the wrestling. I think too many quote-unquote color commentators in the indies try to get themselves over instead of what's happening in the ring. And that really, like, hurts the wrestling, and that hurts the story that they're trying to tell in the ring. You know, usually I feel like some people don't utilize commentators correctly. One place that I've been to that has really good a good commentating team, no matter what combination of guys they use, is XICW. And they do all of their commentary over the headsets. They push the stories, they push the references and everything, but nobody's trying to get over on each other. I've been on a couple of shows where they've done live commentary over the PA, and it just, half the time you can't even understand what's being said, and the other half is time that it's them saying things that aren't related to what's going on in the match or the story that they're trying to tell, or it's not anything about the wrestlers. It's about themselves getting over, and it's not needed. Personally, I think it's not needed. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of it. I could honestly do without it. I would rather wrestle in silence than wrestle with live commentary over the PA system.
I believe I'm right there with you. Most of the time, it seems kind of an awkward thing to do, but I know a lot of independent companies like it as sort of a, I guess, an educational piece for the fans that may not have attended their show before, but still seems a little bit odd to me.
Yeah.
One of the things in pro wrestling that has become a staple, and you see very, very few wrestlers without it anymore, is entrance music. A lot of people spend a lot of time coming up with what they consider the perfect entrance music for them. A lot of people get custom music if they know musicians or they happen to be a musician themselves. What is your entrance music situation currently, and how has it evolved throughout your career?
Well, when I first started, it was just it was songs that I liked. It wasn't necessarily about, you know, me or my gimmick or anything like that. It was just like, you know, oh, I like that song, you know, let me come out to that. And then as I evolved, it was very much like I need to pick something that matches my personality and matches my gimmick and matches my movements. And, you know, something like I come out to some very heavy metal type music, you know, very heavy metal, very industrial style, because, you know, my gimmick now is that, like, I'm a post-apocalyptic wasteland schizophrenic. You know, if that doesn't scream, you know, heavy metal drums and sound effects and things like that, then I don't know what does. So that's what I use now. I feel like entrance music should always be a part of you. Like, if you're going to pick something that represents you and what you're trying to do. Don't just pick something that's like, oh, hey, I really like that song. That's cool. Let me use that. You know, like, pick something that represents you. Even if you don't like it, you know, something that represents your gimmick well, something that represents your character, something that represents yourself, you know, pick it, you know. And I think, you know, some people are really good about it, and then there are other people where it's like, you listen to it and you go, why the heck would he come out to this? Why this song? I don't understand it, you know. But everybody has their own taste, you know. That's just my personal opinion. So everybody has their own taste, and whatever they come out to is up to them. I just know that with who I am and what I do, I'm coming out to something heavy and loud and fast.
This week has been a bit of a hard week in the professional wrestling world. We lost Tracy Smothers a few days ago to cancer. Tracy seems to have been almost universally loved, which is extremely rare in the wrestling business. But he touched a lot of careers and a lot of different people in a lot of different areas, and is very sorely missed. Social media was almost an entire blanket of Tracy Smothers memories a couple of days ago. Did you have any interactions with him at shows you did, or did you come across a lot of people that did work regularly with Tracy?
Personally, I've only met Tracy a couple of times. It was never any, you know, anything major. It was always a, hey, how are you doing? Hey, glad you made it here safe. And I feel like that was really cool about Tracy, is that he always made sure that, you know, you were good. You know, he always, anytime you walk into a locker room, or he walks into a locker room, you know, he shook hands, he treated everybody as equals. He never really looked down on anyone. You could be in the business for 1 minute, or you could be in the business for, you know, 10 years, 20 years, and he would look at you as an equal, which a lot of people don't do here, you know, lately. And another thing, like, Tracy was really close to one of my friends that I came up with named Johnny H. And I, Tracy Smothers actually saved Johnny. You know, Johnny wanted to stop wrestling. He wanted to quit. He was really down on himself, really depressed. And I know that Tracy Smothers picked him up and was like, come on, kid, come with me. And he teamed with him in a couple of places and helped him out as best he could, you know. So I look up and I thank Tracy Smothers every day for, like, you know, helping my friend now. But yeah, Wrestling World took a really hard hit with him, and I've never heard anybody say anything bad about Tracy Smothers. And you know, with everything that's happened in 2020, that's amazing to hear that there are some people out there in this business that are actually, you know, really good people. And Tracy Smothers was a really good person, I believe, and he's going to be missed.
I agree with you wholeheartedly there. I don't think that it's possible to replace Tracy just because of all the good things he did and all of the help he gave over the years, most of which we'll never really know or appreciate. Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I know that he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to him for a while.
All right, right on.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Mr. Jacobs.
Hi, how are you?
Well, pretty good. Welcome to the Turnbuckle Turmoil Show. I know it's your first time, yes.
Yep. Thank you for having me again.
No problem. Well, Mr. Jacobs, I saw your YouTube video entitled Daniel Eads versus Dre Jacobs, and what stood out at me, or the first thing that caught my eye, at the tunnel entrance to the runway to your match, if you freeze the video at the 1 minute and 1 second mark, there is a young kid about, I'd say, 14 years old that is wearing a pinkish, reddish shirt with Drew Carey-like glasses, and he's wearing a Drew Carey-like haircut. Plus, he has a similar build like Drew Carey. In fact, if Drew Carey himself could travel back in time, he might be this kid. My question is, were you yourself a fan of his sitcom show, Cleveland Rocks?
No, I never even heard of it, to be honest, you know. It's funny. I'm an old soul in a young man's body, but I knew the Drew Carey show, and I knew Whose Line Is It Anyway. I never. That, by the way, that is the most awesome question I've ever been asked in an interview to date.
Well, we do ask the hard questions on this show. We have a history of these questions. Yes, 10 years. Okay. All right. Well, Dre, I believe your homework assignment after we get off, if you have time, is go on YouTube and look up Cleveland Rocks with Drew Carey in it.
All right.
And if you could report back to Sign Guy about your first impressions, especially with his dancing and the crew's dancing to the theme song, Cleveland Rocks, I think Sign Guy would appreciate that, and so would I.
All right, man. I'll definitely get on that if I have time.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Jacobs, with his Marine Corps training, and he was in the Marine Corps, do you believe Drew Carey could have been a good wrestler? And if so, how do you think he would have done in a match against Santino Marella?
I definitely think that Drew Carey could have at least been a manager, if not the next world champion. I mean, in a match against Santino, it would definitely be better than his appearance in the Royal Rumble, right? Like, it would have to be, right?
Ooh, that I'd never thought of that. I guess so. Ooh.
I mean, I know he was in the Royal Rumble, and he quote unquote eliminated both of the Hardy Boys. So I mean, maybe he can take Santino easily.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Mr. Jacobs, the announcer said that you were from Grand Haven, Michigan. How far away from Grand Haven is Green Bay, Wisconsin? And were you a big fan of Mr. Kennedy?
Oh gosh, I'm not really sure. I know, where is Wisconsin? I gotta put on my thinking cap here. Hold on.
Okay.
This was a bad time to let everybody know that I failed geography. I'm not really sure. I want to say maybe 10, 12 hours, anywhere between 10 and 12 hours. And actually, yes, I was a big fan of Mr. Kennedy. I definitely liked him more when he was a part of the WWE than when he was in Impact Wrestling, just because I felt like he was utilized better. Maybe not better, but maybe he was utilized in a different light that seemed more entertaining. I think it was, oh gosh, was it WrestleMania 23 that he won the Money in the Bank?
Ooh, now I have a homework assignment. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was WrestleMania 23 in Detroit, Michigan. I went to that, and he won the Money in the Bank, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. You know, like I was probably the only person jumping out of my seat, because Mr. Kennedy had won the Money in the Bank. You know, out of all the other people that were in the match, out of all the other talent that was in the match, I was probably the one guy that was screaming my head off for Mr. Kennedy. So
wow, you went to WrestleMania 23?
Yep, I did, actually. If you go back and watch, you'll definitely not recognize me, because I was probably 12 years old, 12 or 13 years old. But if you go back and watch, there's a kid with a DX shirt, a John Cena, one of the Hustle Loyalty Respect chains, and it's the match where I believe it's the ECW Originals take on the New Breed. And we were sitting right there, and you can see me as Tommy Dreamer comes down the stairwell to in the arena to get to the ring.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So I made my WrestleMania debut before I even started wrestling. How about that?
Wow. Fantastic. Now I have a homework assignment. Yes. In fact, as you are looking up Cleveland Rocks with a dancing Drew Carey and the rest of the cast, I'll probably be looking up Tommy Dreamer when he's coming down the ramp. Yes. Okay. Oh, all right, a double homework assignment. This doesn't happen that often on the Turnbuckle Turmoil show. Wow, okay. All right. Well, Mr. Jacobs, at the 1 minute and 23 second mark of the year match with Daniel Ads, Eads, I guess I might be Daniel Ads. One of the announcers commented on how blood was coming from your mouth like Gene Simmons of Kiss. My question is, have you ever used the Kiss song Cold Gin as your entrance music? Cold Gin.
I have not. To be honest, and this might, you know, upset a lot of people, I'm not really a Kiss fan.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I know a couple of people who are, and again, I'm not going to, you know, knock anybody's taste in music. I'm not really a big Kiss fan. I was never really into Kiss. I was more into the new age grunge and everything like that when I started, you know, getting heavy into music and things like that. So I did think that they were very charismatic, and I would be lying if I didn't say that there was a little bit of influence from them in, you know, the things that I do on my way to the ring, like the blood spitting, and the, you know, a little, some of the face paint designs are kind of influenced by Gene Simmons, but not necessarily, you know, like, oh, hey, by the way, I'm Gene Simmons when I go out to the ring. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, and you don't see too much face painting in wrestling anymore. Not that much.
No, not really.
Okay. Well, did you, Mr. Jacobs, did you know at one point that Eddie Van Halen, despondent over his relationship with lead singer David Lee Roth, approached Gene Simmons and asked to be in Kiss? Did you know that?
I did not know that. I had no idea.
Okay, well, now you do. Okay. Yes. All right. Okay, well, Mr. Jacobs, the lyrics to Kiss's song Burn, Bitch, Burn, second verse goes like this. I got nasty habits. It's a fine line. So many girls and so little time. When love rears its head, I want to get on your case. Ooh, baby, want to put my log in your fireplace. My question is, have you ever used a match-like Presto log as a porn object? That's my question.
Say again. One more time, please.
Have you ever used a match-like Presto log as a porn object?
No, I have not. But that is going on the list now.
Okay. Well, you might have to whittle it down, you know, if you put it in the trunk. Whittle it down. Okay.
Yep, I'll make it happen. if Hello. Anybody can make it happen, I will make it happen.
Okay. All right, very good. Well, Mr. Jacobs, at the 3 minute and 25 second mark of the video, Daniel and you were outside the ring, and he gave you a good knife-edged chop, and the sound of his chop hitting your chest made a good whip-like sound. He is a well-built young man. Were you surprised by the power of his chop?
To be honest, no. The man calls himself the Bearded Goku, and anybody who ever watched Dragon Ball knows how strong Goku is, and he knows that he can always go past his limits. So was I shocked? Absolutely not. I was actually, you know, like, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, let's do this. Let's chop it up, you know. But no, and in another point in the match, I don't know, like, maybe you'll get to this later, I'm not sure, but the man picks me up and throws me across the ring like I'm a small child. At the time, I was 300 pounds, and he picked me up and threw me from the suplex position as if I was a small child. So I'm not surprised at all by Daniel Eads' power. You know, anybody that calls himself the bearded Goku is going to be strong.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, at the 3 minute and 43 second mark, one of the announcers said that you liked to call yourself an unpredictable tank. My question is, have you yourself ever gone online and seen some of the Army tank action of the 1990 Gulf War that was led by Allied Supreme Commander Stormin Norman Schwarzkopf?
No, I have not. But when I made that comment, I actually thought about the old World War I tanks and how slow but well that they could maneuver over different land masses. And that's actually where the phrase came from.
Oh, unpredictable tank. Okay. Wow. All right. Yeah, I've seen.
Because usually you see something that big and you think, oh, there's no way it's going to get over that. There's no way it's going to get to us. There's no way it's going to make it over that hill or make it over that trench. And then they did. So it was unpredictable, you know, and at the time nobody had seen, you know, tanks like this before. So again, that's, you know, that's what I try to emulate when I'm wrestling is like, oh yeah, he's a big guy, but watch how well he can maneuver. Watch how well he moves. Watch how graceful he can be.
Wow. Well, now, as you know, World War I also saw the debut of the flamethrower. At any time in your career, did you consider yourself calling yourself the unpredictable flamethrower?
No, I haven't, but that's only because I've wrestled the DBA, who tends to light a lot of things on fire and hit you with them. So usually he's the unpredictable flamethrower.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, very good. All right. Well, Mr. Dre, after Daniel Adds hit a spear on you while you were in the corner, he walked away, and at the 5 minute and 40 second mark, he raises both arms, and you can see some very well-developed triceps and upper back, rear shoulder, and neck area. It reminded me of Chris Masters. My question is, did you see the Master Lock Challenge where Chris Masters got the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, in a Master Lock, and it seemed that the Master Lock was indeed broken when Chris Masters' hands came undone, but he then threw Shawn Michaels to the mat and hit him with a steel chair. Did you see this Master Lock Challenge with Shawn Michaels?
Oh, my gosh. I vaguely remember it, yes. I did see it.
Oh, okay. Yes, if you look closely, it looks like Chris Masters' hands became undone and they were separated. You might want to go to a refresher video and have a second homework assignment besides Drew Carey dancing and look up this particular Master Lock Challenge with Shawn Michaels.
All right. Yeah, I'll do that too. Got a lot of homework.
Okay.
Man, I graduated from high school and all that stuff, and I'm still doing homework.
Well, after you look at our two videos and maybe get back to Sign Guy on the Drew Carey video, you will have graduated summa cum laude.
Okay.
Which is like a 3.8 grade point average. Yes. Okay.
All right. That'll be the highest I've ever graduated on. So that'll be my highest GPA.
Okay. Oh, well, somebody will help you with this then, I think. Okay.
Yeah. I graduated with a 3.6, so.
Wow. Hey, that's nothing to sneeze at. Okay. Nothing. Okay. Well, Mr. Jacobs, on a more serious note and a somber one, and not one to take lightly, I just came across a video that involved a wrestler who was terribly hurt in the ring. Alex Reynolds, and this was during an AEW match, and it seemed like a wrestler named Blade may have been quite aware at how much he was hurt and tried to drag him to the apron out of harm's way. Have you seen this video, and can you tell us a little bit about this video? Right before the show, I came across it, so I don't know too much about it.
So I actually saw it last weekend. I didn't watch it live. I usually don't watch wrestling on TV live. I usually have to catch it the next day or whatever. But I did see this clip. Let me before anything else gets said, let me just say that I do commend Blade for trying to get Alex out of the ring. I feel like he was the only one in the situation with enough common sense to realize that Alex was hurt and that he needed to get out. He needed help somewhere or some way. When I first watched the video, I was very upset because I'm very big on safety. You know, it's one of the first things that we're taught is to protect our opponents out there, is to protect the guys we're working with out there. And when the lack of attention given to him from not only the other participants in the match, but the referee who did not check on him, it was very disheartening and very despicable. I felt it was very unprofessional. It left a very sickening feeling, you know, because obviously anybody who's a pro wrestler is going to aspire to go to bigger places. Right now in the States, the two biggest places to be are AEW and WWE. And then, of course, Impact is there too. But the one that's getting the most mainstream attention right now is AEW and WWE. And to see that, it really put a dampering on my thoughts about joining that company, just because it felt like, oh, it doesn't feel like a safe work environment. Now, I'm sure that they do have trained medical professionals and things like that, and they took care of Alex afterwards, but I just think that the lack of care that, you know, in that instant, in that moment, you know, things like that can be literally life-changing. You know, people were still, you know, wrestling around him and landing on him and bumping on him and things like that. And it's like, if you don't know the extent of someone's injury and you continue to use them or continue to bump on them, then you're putting them at risk. You know, you're putting them at a higher risk of losing a life or a limb or something. And not only putting them at risk, but putting yourself at risk, because, you know, you depend on your opponent as much as you depend on yourself out there. And if there's something that he's supposed to do that he can no longer physically do because he's knocked out or he's not there, and you're still expecting him to be there, you know, you're putting yourself in harm's way as well. Since that night, I went back and I watched it again, and I had calmed down from an instant, and I had gotten a couple of different opinions about it. It was a very touchy subject, but I still believe that necessary precautions were not taken. And I think that, you know, besides Blade trying to get Alex away from all the carnage, I feel like, you know, that was a really bad call to continue the match with him in it, or to not adjust and take it home or something like that. I think it should have been handled better. It definitely should have been handled different, if not better. And I hope that down the line, we kind of just say, you know, things like this, you know, injuries happen and sometimes moments get the better of people. But at the same time, it's like one of the first things we're taught is to protect each other, you know. And I didn't feel Alex was protected in that instant. And that kind of made me upset. So.
All right. Okay, very well said. Okay, very good. All right. Well, Mr. Jacob, I mentioned Dave Masters before, and creative gimmicks in pro wrestling has a deep history. Gorgeous mm-hmm. George was a pioneer. Were you a big fan of the Hurricane?
I was until I met him. It's not really that bad. It's more of like, you know, first of all, in the WWE, he's a cruiserweight, you know, and then when I met him, he's like 6'2". Like, he towers over me. I'm only 5'10", 5'11". So the guy towers over me, you know. So that was a shocker. But then, like, I don't know if he was having a bad day or whatever, but he didn't introduce himself to any of the guys in the locker room. He didn't shake anybody's hand. He kind of went off and isolated himself and put a curtain up in part of the locker room to dress up and everything like that. And it was just, it was like, really like, wow, like, that guy's kind of a jerk, you know, like, and I'm sure, you know, people have off days, and I'm sure he's not really a jerk, but this day he came off as a jerk. So I was kind of like, man, I don't know. I used to like the guy. I watched him on TV. He was funny. He was entertaining. And now, you know, meeting him for the first time, it's kind of like, ugh. That guy's – I don't want to hang out with that guy. You know what I mean? So.
Well, so you may be thinking of downgrading him to a tropical storm. That's what you're getting at.
Yeah. maybe not so much a hurricane, maybe like a tornado. I don't know. Like, I don't personally, I don't think the guy is a bad guy, but that was just my first impression of meeting him in person, and it just didn't go well. You know what I mean? I'm sure my first impression of meeting Tommy Dreamer didn't go well either. And I'm not talking about when I was a kid and he was coming down at WrestleMania. I'm actually talking like my first impression of meeting Dreamer in a locker room wasn't really that well received either. But then, like, I hung out with Dreamer 2 years, like, was it 2 years or a year ago? A year ago in Cincinnati, a show outside of Cincinnati, and he was a totally different person. So, I mean, it's good days and bad days, and I'm sure Hurricane was just having a bad day that day, but still, it was just kind of like, wow, that guy's kind of a jerk, you know, in that moment, so.
Okay. All right, well, Dre, it was very nice talking with you, and I wish you good luck in whittling down your fire log to fit in your tights. and at this time, I'm turning it back over to Sun Guy. Back to you, Sun Guy.
Thank you. Well, that guy's a character, isn't he?
back to you, Sun Guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, Dre, one of the things that is in your area is a wrestler that we know very well on the show. He is also one of the premier wrestling gear makers anywhere in the world, that being Kongo Kong. I know you have crossed paths with Kongo Kong mm-hmm. from time to time on various shows. Can we get your...
Yep.
Thoughts on Kongo Kong?
Kongo Kong is what I would call my wrestling father. He's ever since I met him, he's been nothing but good to me. He's been a great influence on me. He's taken me under his wing. Definitely didn't have to, but he did. And ever since then, for the last 4 years, you know, I have nothing but good things to say about Kongo Kong. His work is amazing. Because of him, I have transitioned into a character or a gimmick that I'm really comfortable with, and he's really helped me with that and really grasped the concept of being more of a monster out there. And without him, I don't think I would have been able to really grasp that concept on my own. So I thank him for that. But Kongo's he's a great guy. I actually just got – it's funny you mentioned the gear. I actually just got a pair of gear from Kongo that I have yet to debut. So, you know, keep an eye out for that. It's actually really cool. And he got it done while he was out with an injury. So, you know, he could have been resting. He could have been getting his stuff together. But instead, he worked on the kid's brand new gear for him and got it to him. So I love Congo. Congo's great.
100% agree there. And I'm still anxiously awaiting the gear he is making for me. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely fantastic. But
I mean,
right,
my stuff looks great, fits great. You know, it's good. It's good material. So,
there's no better
he does good
maker.
I've been using eLucha for the last 10 years. I just switched to Congo, and I don't see me going to anybody else statewide except for Congo.
I don't know why you would. Keep in mind, he does not fix eLucha gear. He had his
right.
difficulties with that. We're down to the last few minutes in today's show, and I want to make sure you have ample time. If there is anything you would like to say to the listeners today, plug and promote anything and everything from the social medias to upcoming appearances to merchandise to your favorite bakery, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
All right. So a couple of things. Obviously, social media. Follow me on Instagram at DreLTWJacobs. You can check me out on YouTube. Just type in Dre Jacobs in the search bar. It'll try to autocorrect it to Drew Jacobs. Don't listen to it. Drew's a good guy, but he's not me. So, you know, look me up on Facebook. You know, I'm usually really easy to talk to. But other than that, I wanna plug a couple of other guys that may not have, you know, been seeing or have the time. One of them, I want to give a shout out to my boy Justin Dream, the black sheep Justin Dream, who's out there. You know, he's killing it in the business, and I recommend him highly for any promotions. Malcolm Monroe III, MM3, another great guy. Be sure to look out for him. Be sure to look out for all of the War Inc. members. El Ridiculoso, TJ Meyer, Ryan Freeman, Megan DeFrancisco, Matt Hagen, the Hyena Matt Hagen, and my redneck friend Billy Ray Daniels. You know, all of them are great guys. And, of course, coming back from injury slowly but surely, the modern-day shaman. So be on the lookout for War Inc. Be on the lookout for all those guys and girls that are killing it and getting back into things. Other than that, I've got nothing else, guys. So,
well, Dre Jacobs, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. We appreciate you taking the time to do so, and we want to wish you well as you continue on with your career, and hopefully we'll do this again sometime.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, guys. I had a ball.
Absolutely. Fans, definitely, if Dre is on a show near you, go buy a ticket, pick up some of his merchandise. Great, great talent. He's well respected among his peers, so keep an eye on him. And we want to wish everyone a very safe and happy upcoming Halloween. If you're going to take part in the festivities, be safe, and we hope that you maybe consider dressing up as Dre Jacobs this Halloween. I'm sure he'd appreciate it. Dress as your favorite Turnbuckle Turmoil host. Lots of costume choices out there. But as we wrap things up today, obviously the news hit about Tracy Smothers. Tracy Smothers was a guest on this very program a couple of times. Someone I came across a few times myself. It was always a pleasure to come into contact with Tracy Smothers. He was a professional, and everyone in this business to some degree was influenced in part by Tracy Smothers, because he definitely influenced so many people all around the world. He was a huge influence at every level of pro wrestling, so we're all going to miss him. And as we end things today, we're going to hit the traditional 10-bell salute for Tracy Smothers, and we'll be back with you Sunday afternoon.